Timothy Cardinal Dolan is one of the biggest names in the Catholic Church. One of the most prominent, one of the most powerful bishops, cardinals in the United States and the world. And I've known him since I was a third grader at the Church of the Immaculata in St. Louis, Missouri, Richmond Heights, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis. And what people don't know about Timothy Cardinal Dolan is his involvement in the Catholic sex abuse crisis. What he did and what he did not do at Immaculata to lots of guys, myself included. My name is Chris O'Leary, and I'm a survivor of the Catholic sex abuse crisis. From the fall of 1977 till at least December 26, 1980, if not beyond into the first half of 1981, I was sexually exploited, abused, assaulted, raped by a priest named Father Leroy Valentine at the Church of the Immaculata in Richmond Heights, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis, just about 15, 20 minutes from downtown St. Louis. And while I've talked about my story, the aspect of my story that people don't know, largely because the media won't cover it or are afraid to cover it, and I'm talking about the New York Times in particular, but also the Washington Post. What people don't know about my story and the story of the other guys in St. Louis and at Immaculata, in particular, the guys who were abused by Father Leroy Valentine, is the involvement of Timothy Cardinal Dolan in our experience. What he did and what he didn't do. Literally, my first memory of a priest, my earliest memory of a priest, is of Timothy Cardinal Dolan, then Father Dolan. This would be, you know, starting probably fall of 1976. I would be in third grade, 8, maybe 9 years old, probably 9. And we had a new priest come to us right out of the seminary, Father Dolan, Father Tim Dolan. Was immediately obvious that he was different, not just that he was a big deal and that he was seemed to be on kind of a special track, but he was also very friendly and, you know, liked to be around kids and liked to interact with kids. He was very busy. He was rarely around, but when he would come into the school at Immaculata, and in my case, this would be third grade religion class with Mrs. K. It was a very big deal. I don't know if I ever remember Monsignor Flavin coming into the school. But I do remember the day Father Dolan showed up at the school. Because I remember it being time for religion class, and we knew that Father Dolan was coming over. What I remember is standing at the door of Mrs. K's classroom up on the third floor, the southeast corner of the building of Immaculata, looking out the door, around the corner, down the hallway, west down the hallway, to see if Father Dolan was on his way. And eventually I caught a glimpse of him kind of making the right turn off of the stairway and starting to walk down the hall, and I ducked my head back in and, you know, whispered, "He's coming! He's coming!" And everybody sat down and waited the minute or so it took him to walk down the hallway, which seemed like a mile to me when I was a kid, but it's probably like, you know, 20 or 30 yards, something like that, because there are only two or three classrooms, you know, along each wall at Immaculata up on the third level. Maybe just two. I remember it as more than that, but maybe it's just two. Wow, it's a lot. Things change as you get older. So what Father Dolan was there to do was to give us a lesson on the reading of the day. And remember, this is fall of 76, and at Immaculata, we were very old school, thanks to Monsignor Flavin. We went to Mass every day. So, you know, we were going to Mass 6 out of 7 days a week. The only day we wouldn't go would be Saturday. And the lesson, what happened that day is, you know, we would have a religion class one day a week. And what Father Dolan did was he came to talk to us and to speak about and make sure we understood the reading for that day, which was Mark 8:22-26, where Jesus heals the blind man at, I think it's Bethesda, maybe Bethesdaia. I always remember it as Bethesda, but it may be different. And what's a little bit unusual about that story is that Jesus takes two tries to get it right. And I always really liked that story because I was taught it and understood it as Jesus made a mistake, which made Jesus all the more human, and which made what he did prior, you know, in Jerusalem on his last days prior to the resurrection, all the more powerful, because he didn't do it as God, he did it as man, warts and all. Now that's evidently controversial, but that's how I was taught it, and, you know, reading it as an adult, it still makes sense to me that there's a reason why Jesus did it that way. But one of the reasons why I remember that story is that I was one of the two people who was chosen to act out that story for the class. You know, Father Dolan asked, who remembers the story from Mass earlier today? And I raised my hand and was selected. And then one of the girls, I think it was the girl who was the Baptist with the long red hair, I think she was chosen to play the part of the blind person. It's kind of progressive that a woman was chosen to play the role of a man in the Bible. It's kind of stupid, but also nice that women were, that the girls were involved, because the girls were not involved once you moved higher up and it got into, you know, altar servers and that kind of stuff. The girls were very pointedly excluded from serving and all the behind the scenes functions in the rectory, in the sacristy of the church. But so I was chosen to play the role of Jesus, and a girl was chosen to play the part of the blind person. So Father Dolan took us out in the hallway, the two of us out in the hallway for a minute, and just made sure we understood the story, and then walked back into the classroom with us and had us act out the story in front of the class. And so what I did was I pantomimed spitting on the ground, getting some mud out, and then rubbing it on her eyes. And she opened her eyes and said, "I can see, but everything I see, all the people, what I guess are the people, they all look like trees or like sticks." So then I said, uh-oh, you know, acted that out all dramatically. And then did the same thing. I spat on the ground, grabbed some mud, rubbed it on her eyes, and then that time it worked. And she was able to see just fine. And I mean, I always remember that, not just because it was Father Dolan, not just because I was selected, but because of that, what I took to be the message of that story, which is, you know, forgiveness and making mistakes. And, you know, if Jesus Christ could make a mistake, then, you know, and he could still be the Savior, it was possible for me and for us to make mistakes and still be saved. Now, that's where things get complicated. So Father Dolan showed up, you know, late summer of 76, and then in late summer of 77, a guy named Father Leroy Valentine showed up straight out of the seminary. I wouldn't have known that he was there until school started, like in the last week of August or so, because I wasn't serving. You didn't serve until you were in fifth grade or so. But, you know, so as soon as school started, we knew that there was a new priest there in addition to Monsignor Flavin and Father Dolan. There was now a third guy, Father Valentine. And Father Valentine was even more interested in kids and boys in particular, and even more involved than Father Dolan was. I don't remember seeing Father Dolan that often. You know, you would see him pretty much every morning because, you know, in that day, we went to Mass every day of the week. So in the way Immaculata was set up, you know, there were hundreds of kids there, and then we had three aisles that you had to cover, so there would be three priests would show up to give out communion every day. So you would see Monsignor Flavin and Father Dolan, you know, if they weren't celebrating the Mass themselves, they would come out in order to give out communion. There were no extraordinary ministers at the time. So, you know, I get the first Mass or so, we got our first glimpse of Father Valentine, along with Father Dolan and Monsignor Flavin. And Father Valentine got very involved immediately with the setting up a youth group and youth programs and getting involved with, we didn't have Cub Scouts at the time, but he got involved in the after school programs and athletics and that kind of stuff. He was very, very involved. Father Dolan was somewhat involved, but it was obvious that he must have had a job. Either he was studying or he had a job like down at the Archdiocese, because Father Dolan wasn't around that much, which was one reason why it was a big deal when he came up to our classroom to teach us religion, because A, it was rare for priests to enter the school, and B, Father Dolan wasn't around all the time like Monsignor Flavin or Father Valentine were. He lived at Immaculata, but it seemed like he worked or studied somewhere else. I don't know, down at the Basilica or wherever the Archdiocese offices were at the time. I don't know if they had the Regali Center or not. So that fall of 77, I would be 9, turning 10 in late September. Father Valentine was obviously really interested in boys. And while I wasn't a altar server because I was just in the fourth grade and you didn't start serving until you were in the fifth grade, Father Valentine still had what I thought of as parties where he would try to get to know some of the boys. And the way that would work is he would have guys over to the rectory to play board games and eat pizza and drink real Coke, not Vess or RC Cola. And I remember a party in late fall 77, Thanksgiving-ish, where most of the leaves are off the trees, I remember a party that Father Valentine threw for me and three other guys, a Risk, where we played Risk and ate pizza and drank real Coke. And Father Valentine would, as the night would progress, would kind of take us one at a time elsewhere in the rectory, in my case, into the TV room, where I assumed that he was testing us or grooming us and trying to see who he liked and see who was either too scared or too oblivious to notice what he was doing to boys and how he was touching us. And I ended up passing the test. And there were other times that, especially after Mass, Father Valentine would get boys into the rectory. I know of at least one other guy that he did this to, where I assume it was after Mass, maybe before Mass. I think it was after Mass. He would, especially if it was just one guy serving the Mass, and I remember those days as being special training, but we would serve the Mass and then go over to the rectory. And sometimes we would just stay in the kitchen, and other times Father Valentine would bring us up to his room. And I know of at least, I remember being up in Father Valentine's room when Cardinal Dolan, well, Father Dolan, was around. And I, what Valentine would do with me, he did this both in the sacristy and in the rectory upstairs and downstairs. He would play with my hair and whisper things in my ear with, like, his left hand. I don't know which hand it was. With one hand, he would play with my hair, and with his other hand, he would touch me. I haven't actually thought about which hand he was, but I don't know if I remember. I think I just remember being touched and not being so kind of shocked and frozen that I didn't, you know, I don't remember it. I was just being touched. But I'm not the only person that happened to. And I remember once sitting on the bed up in Father Valentine's room. And seeing Father Dolan, and he saw what was going on, and I remember the look on his face. And the gist of this is that while Valentine did a good job of hiding what he was doing from the other priests, you know, like I said, when he did stuff to me, it would be during special training, which happened during the old people's Mass, which I think was at 9 o'clock during the summer. It would just be him and me and Valentine in the back of the sacristy. So, you know, there wouldn't be other priests around, because at the old people's Mass, there are only, you know, 20 or 30 people. So there's only need for one priest. You don't have to have multiple priests distributing hosts. And you can get away with one altar boy, although usually there are two altar boys, one to cover the left aisle and one to cover the right, or the right side of the aisle and one to cover the left side of the aisle. Because this is back in the day, you know, this is 77 now, but we still, there was no communion in the hand. Everything was in the tongue. And we still, the altar boys actually had a job where we would put the serving the plates under people's mouths to catch the hosts if they accidentally dropped out of the people's mouths, because it's sacrilegious for a consecrated host to hit the ground. So while a lot of the stuff with Valentine happened while it was just him and me, for things like the Risk party and other things, Dolan was around. Father Dolan was around. Monsignor Flavin was also around. And they knew, they had to have known about Valentine's interest in boys and how Valentine liked to have parties for boys. I thought, and this is part of why Valentine was so diabolical. Valentine had a way of making you feel special and singled out. And it, up until like 6 months ago, I thought I was the only person that went to a Risk party and that would do youth group stuff with Father Valentine. In my case, it was a mud cave. He would take other guys camping or hiking or, you know, that kind of stuff. I thought I was the only one that Valentine was doing that to, but it turns out that I think he was doing it to basically everybody. Or, you know, every day of the weekend, he had a different guy or group of guys that he was doing stuff with. And I mean that in the sense of camping or doing guy stuff, but also doing other stuff. But I'm not the only person that ended up in Valentine's room, where I guess he was again testing me or grooming me. I know of at least one other person who ended up in that. And they sent me a direct message, and that's one of the direct messages that I tweet a lot. But the point, the fact is that Dolan was there and he was around and he saw at least some of it. And all I know is nothing ever changed for us. Things never got better. I was being tested, groomed, exploited, abused from the first day that Valentine was there until at least December 26, 1980, if not into 1981. And Dolan saw it, and he knew it, and he didn't, well, nothing changed. I don't know whether he did something or not. I don't know whether he went to Monsignor Flavin. Dolan, while he would have been a year senior to Father Valentine, I don't think he would have been his superior. He would have been his peer. So both Dolan and Valentine both would have rolled up to Monsignor Flavin. Someone once asked me if I thought that Dolan took Valentine's confession, and I think that's possible, but I don't know for sure because I don't know how that worked exactly. You know, there were the three priests there, and it's possible, I mean, it's possible that only Flavin took the confessions of the priests, but I don't exactly know how that works. But so the gist is that, you know, Dolan was around. He saw at least testing and grooming behaviors, and nothing changed for us. This gets into the whole kind of Penn State kind of thing where, you know, what's the responsibility of someone who sees a problematic act? Is it enough for them to just report it to their superior, or are they morally obliged to intervene even if they don't have the authority to do so? You know, as a guy, you can always kick someone's ass or call the cops, and that's not what happened. That's not what Dolan did. I don't know if he reported it or what, but what I do know is that and I remember this vividly, there's no doubt about this. So in early March 2002, I think it was March 2nd, 2002, and this was like a week after I had had my youngest child. I had a newborn in the house. A story ran on the New York Times talking about Father Valentine and talking about allegations that he had sexually abused, raped three brothers at a parish somewhere else in St. Louis. The New York Times ran that piece, and then the St. Louis media picked up the story, and it was all over the paper and the news channels. And I don't know that I even noticed that. I think my wife at the time, now ex-wife, noticed that and said something about, hey, didn't, you know, you were at a Mac, weren't you at Immaculata with Father Valentine? Haven't you talked about Father Valentine? And I said, yeah, and I ended up, so what happened is the Archdiocese of St. Louis and the circuit attorney, Jennifer Joyce, both put out requests for people to come forward and call with any information they might have. So I called Jennifer Joyce's office. I may have also called Ruth Azell at Channel 5 or sent her an email or something. I think I did send her an email at least. It was on my AOL account. I can't find it. I've actually looked for that email. So Jennifer Joyce, the circuit attorney's office, they never got back to me. I've heard that they convened a grand jury. I was never called. I never heard anything back from them. I mean, my memories were a little flaky, but I had, you know, I spent a lot of time with, well, it's not that my memories were flaky. It's that I didn't know what the hell they meant. In retrospect, with a parent's hat, yeah, no, I would never let my kid do that with a priest. But, you know, my parents were out of town. They were on vacation whenever the special training would happen. So they literally didn't know about it, and my babysitter didn't know any better. So I called the circuit attorney's office, didn't hear back, and then I called the Archdiocese of St. Louis in on the number that was provided through the media. And very quickly, like the next day, I get a call back from the Archdiocese of St. Louis. And it's now Bishop Dolan, Tim Dolan. I knew him as Father Dolan, but now he's an auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of St. Louis in early March 2002. Hey, Chris, Tim Dolan, Bishop Dolan, good to talk to you. Been a long time. Got a call from you about Father Valentine. You know, what's up? What do you, you know, what do you got? That kind of stuff. So I told him a set of five memories or so, most of which were innocuous, but, you know, and there was nothing obvious, and I didn't tell him all the memories because I didn't have a lot of repressed memory, which is one of the reasons why I believe myself, but I did have some, and I hadn't recovered the memories of the worst stuff or really kind of understood what this one memory meant. But I had four or five memories of involving stuff that I as a parent would find questionable, and that if my kid had told me about it, I'd be pissed and I would have gone to the pastor immediately. But when I told those stories to Bishop Dolan, he told me immediately without any investigation. And people have tried to say, you know, well, you told Dolan your claims and he investigated them and the Archdiocese investigated them and they didn't find anything. No, it's not what happened. I told Bishop Dolan five memories or so. And then I asked him, do you think this means anything? Do you believe what they're saying about Father Valentine? Could that be true? And Bishop Dolan immediately, without any investigation, told me, no. I've known Leroy Valentine for years. We were at the seminary together. We lived and worked together at Immaculata. I know Leroy Valentine didn't do any of the things that he's accused of. I know he would never do anything to hurt a child. And that was enough for me. But Dolan did say at the end of that, he's like, but if you want to talk to someone about this, we've got, you know, I know someone who understands this stuff, a psychologist who understands this stuff and works with this stuff, and I can refer you to her if you want to, and, you know, and we'll pay for it. So I took him up on that because, well, I wasn't sure. I didn't really think that my memories meant anything. It was weird because I had four kids by that time, and I had started to develop a parent's brain and start to get a sense of what's normal and what's weird. And I just didn't. I wanted reassurance. I wanted a second opinion. So I went to the office of this female psychologist. I actually remember exactly where it is. It took me 5 years to find it because I literally couldn't see the building in front of my eyes. But then in February of 2016, for whatever reason, I was suddenly able to see it. And I talked to a woman who I believe was She was sold to me as an independent psychologist. I believe she was Nancy Brown, the assistance coordinator for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. She died in early 2006, I think. But so I talked to her, and she, I told her the same set of memories, four or five memories, and she's like, no, that doesn't mean anything. I think you're just, she told me, I think you're just misinterpreting his actions or his intentions. I don't think that means anything. And again, that was good enough for me, because I don't think I wanted it to be a thing. And, you know, I was exhausted. I had a newborn. You know, we were probably going to Florida and Disney or something, and a couple days later, and I really didn't want it to mean anything. And I've had conversations with people, and people would ask me, you know, well, was Father Valentine a good priest? And I was like, oh yeah, he was a great priest. And they're like, well, except for the whole abuse thing. Except for the whole raping kids thing. He was a great priest. Which just shows you how quickly and thoroughly your brain can lock information like that stuff down. But so this is early to mid March 2002. Like I said, spring break would have been like the next week or something. And well, actually, yeah, no, we ended up going to spring break because our plans were kind of up in the air because we had a newborn and we didn't know how well she would handle the car ride. But she turned out to be a very, very calm, quiet baby. I think she was amused and fascinated by the family that she had been born into, her older brothers and sisters, and found them endlessly entertaining. So I don't think we went to Disney, but I think we did go to Florida, and we hung out at my parents' place and played in the pool and did the beach and that kind of stuff. And I put the Valentine stuff behind me, because Dolan had told me nothing happened, and Nancy Brown told me that nothing happened, that I was just misinterpreting stuff. Now, what's weird is, and troubling and problematic, is that I recently, within the last 6 months or so, came to find, well, and I didn't actually know this. So the article that the early March 2002, the March 2nd, 2002 New York Times piece, I heard about because it was repeated by the St. Louis media. It made it into the paper and it made it onto the local news. Turns out the New York Times ran another piece in late March 2002 announcing the resignation of Father Leroy Valentine. And I didn't have any knowledge of that because I didn't regularly read the New York Times. You know, I was clued into it by the local media, and the local media didn't pick up the story of Father Valentine's resignation for whatever reason. There was a press release sent out, I believe, but the closest it was picked up was in like Cape Girardeau, which is, you know, like an hour and a half south of St. Louis. It didn't run in the local media, which is strange, but you know, whatever. But what's weird about that, and what I've since learned in the past 6 months or so, is that in mid to late March 2002, a third guy came forward. So I came forward in early March 2002. I have a document that I found that proves that a second guy came forward in early March 2002, and he, I assume, had the same kind of conversations with Bishop Dolan. And then a third guy came forward at the end of March, in mid to late March 2002. And the combination of those three reports, my report, the second guy, and then the third guy, and some of the stuff that the third guy said, I know that because I've talked to him and he told me, the combination of that led to Father Valentine resigning. Now, I don't think he resigned on his own. I think he was asked to resign by Dolan because Dolan was named by this third person, as in the sense of, hey, Bishop Dolan, you were there, you were at Immaculata, I know what you saw, That's the third person talking. The third person knew that Dolan knew what was going on. I didn't remember the Dolan stuff. I just remembered the Valentine stuff. But this third person did remember the connection between Dolan and Valentine, and that he remembered that Dolan knew about Valentine, and he called Dolan out on it. And I believe that led Timothy Cardinal Dolan, then Bishop Dolan, to ask Father Leroy Valentine to resign. And here's where things get hard for me to handle. And I didn't learn about this until the last year or so. So at the end of March 2002, Father Leroy Valentine resigned. And not all, and there's so many problems with what happened then, because he didn't just resign, but the Archdiocese of St. Louis actually cut him loose, in the sense that Valentine went to live, I believe, with his mother. At a minimum, he lived in a private residence for some number of years. This is under Archbishop Regali and then Archbishop or Cardinal Burke. So Dolan was, or Valentine was, cut loose by Regali and continued to live among an unsuspecting public under Cardinal Burke. First Cardinal Regali, now Cardinal Burke. And neither Regali nor Dolan nor the Archdiocese of St. Louis followed up with me at the end of March 2002 to say, hey, Chris, you know how we told you that report, or that, you know, what you told us about Valentine, there was nothing to that? Yeah, well, Valentine just resigned, so, you know, there was nothing. They didn't contact me. They didn't make any attempt to contact me, to my knowledge. They certainly didn't make any attempt to help me to dig into, you know, the stories that I had told, which I'd always remembered fondly, but, you know, with an emerging parent's hat on, was starting to wonder about and found to be a little strange. But, you know, I didn't know any better, and I was a kid at the time. But so then Bishop, now Cardinal Dolan, had a chance to help me in late March 2002, and instead of helping me, he did nothing. Which really, really, really bothers me, because, you know, if I had gotten help back then, you know, how would my life be different if Dolan had called me back and let me know that Valentine had resigned? Or if only I had come across that second New York Times late March 2002 piece, if I had only come across that piece, what, you know, how would my life be different? Would I still have a family? Would I still have a life? But instead of getting help, I just kind of went on with my life. And then so in February 2003, my older son made his first confession. I had a panic attack. In February 2005, my older daughter made her first confession, and I had a panic attack. And in both cases, I went to the face-to-face. They went to the dark, scary room side, and I went to the face-to-face side, and I just completely broke down. And I didn't know why, because I had put all the Father Valentine stuff behind me, because Dolan had told me nothing happened and Nancy Brown had told me that I was just misinterpreting it. But by 2007, or, you know, 2005, 2006 is, you know, I get after, it's crazy how this timeline works out, but it's perfect. So I have the panic attack the second time in February 2005, and I really start getting sick, psychologically ill, obsessed with baseball, obsessed with protecting my kids and my older son in particular, who's starting, you know, to pass through the ages that I am. he would have been in fourth grade in 2005, which is exactly the same age that I was. So then I ended up getting sick, ended up losing my job in the summer of 2007. And then, well, my life, you know, I lost my job and was having psychological problems. My life didn't completely collapse. I ended up going on retreat, I think in 2008. I went on an axe retreat. And part of that process is going to confession. I again went to confession, this time at a Marianist retreat center out west of St. Louis. Father Pieper was the priest who heard my confession, Monsignor Pieper, from St. Clement. We went into the room on the north side of the complex, the non-street side, the uphill side of the complex. He heard, well, he was going to hear my confession, but then I had another panic attack and I broke down and started crying and everything and attributed it to stress, but it was just a panic attack. And then I ended up going back on that axe retreat, this time as part of the team. I think this is 2010, and went to confession again, this time to Father Meyer, had another panic attack. And I had also been in therapy, and my therapist and I'd been having horrible productivity problems, and my therapist and I were trying to figure out what the deal was with the productivity stuff, but it wasn't until 2011 that, in 2010, I started mentioning some of the abuse stuff, but not understanding what it meant. I was kind of wondering if it meant something, but again, my therapist, you know, Bishop Dolan told me nothing happened. The Nancy Brown, the therapist that I saw, told me nothing happened. And my therapist at the time was like, well, they both told you nothing happened. And what you're telling me doesn't sound like that big of a deal. So I don't think what you're telling me is really a thing. But so we kept talking and working on stuff, and I started remembering more stuff. And this is where you get into the repressed memory stuff. So that by May 2011, I went back to the Archdiocese of St. Louis and basically asked them, are you sure that this stuff, the stuff I told Bishop Dolan in early March 2002, the stuff I told the woman that I suspect was Nancy Brown in mid-March 2002, are you sure that doesn't mean anything? And not only did they tell me that it was my dad's fault, it didn't have anything to do with Father Valentine, it was all my dad's fault, and they had me read a book called Man Enough by Frank Pittman, which is for guys who had abusive fathers, and while my father was distant, he wasn't abusive. So the whole Man Enough stuff, the whole Man Enough book really freaked me out, because I read it and reread it probably 100 times trying to figure out why the hell Deacon Phil Hangen of the Archdiocese of St. Louis had referred it to me, because it just wasn't me. It didn't make any sense. But in that meeting with the Archdiocese of St. Louis in early May 2011, they told me they had no record of my conversations with either Cardinal Dolan or with Nancy Brown. So somebody between early March 2002 and early May 2011 had removed my memo, my call-in memo, and any records from the file of Father Leroy Valentine. I don't know if that was Bishop Dolan who did it, or someone who was trying to help Bishop Dolan, but the members of the review team in May 2011 told me they had no record of my conversations with Dolan or with Nancy Brown. And that was then later confirmed to me by Bishop Rick Sticca, who happened to follow Bishop Dolan in the role of basically fixer for the Archdiocese of St. Louis, the guy who handled the abuse complaints. I actually approached Bishop Sticca and asked him if he could help me, and he was like, I don't even know who you are. You weren't in Valentine's file. I went through all those files, and I don't have a record of your name. So somebody between March 2002 and May 2011 went through Valentine's file and either removed and discarded or removed and scattered into another priest's file the memo pertaining to my call into the Archdiocese of St. Louis and the records of my conversations with Bishop Dolan and with Nancy Brown. And while that person very well could have been another member of the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Well, and actually, if you look at Sticca's timeline, that actually narrows it down, because if my file was empty, Sticca took over in... So I think Dolan was out of that role by the summer of 2002, so Sticca... I'm literally just figuring this out right now, that current the timeline. Sticca took over for Dolan in the summer of 2002, I think. So it's not that my records were removed somewhere between March 2002 and May 2011. They were removed between March 2002 and the summer of 2002, such that by when Bishop Sticca took over for Dolan, and Sticca went through the records of the problematic predator priests, my name, my memo, any information pertaining to my allegation was not in the file of Father Valentine as of the summer of 2002. And, I mean, maybe another member of the Archdiocese of St. Louis did that, but I think the clear implication in Occam's razor suggests that then Bishop, now Cardinal Dolan, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Timothy Cardinal Dolan, excluded my allegation, my report, from the file of Father Leroy Valentine. And that's not the end of the story. And one of the reasons I believe that there is a cover-up in place, I don't know who's perpetrating it. By this time, Dolan wouldn't have been in a position to perpetrate it, probably. So as of early May 2011, the Archdiocese of St. Louis knew about my allegations against Father Valentine. I know because there was a woman there, Christine Huger, lawyer, was taking notes, and Deacon Phil Hengen explained to me that she was taking notes because she had the best handwriting. Yes, ladies, he's that guy. But so between May 2011 and January 2014, the Archdiocese, for some period of time during that time, the Archdiocese of St. Louis, at least the members of the review team and probably the members of the review board, knew of my allegation against Father Valentine and my conversations with Cardinal Dolan and the woman who I suspect was Nancy Brown. Which is weird, because under court order in January 2014, the Archdiocese of St. Louis produced a document, a spreadsheet of allegations that came to be known as the Matrix. And lo and behold, surprise, surprise, that while that was anonymized, I was able to figure out who Valentine is based on the three allegations that went back to, that were discussed in the New York Times piece in 2002. I was able to figure out who Valentine is. He's number 107 in the Matrix. And surprise, surprise, there's no allegation in the Matrix that corresponds to my conversation with Timothy Cardinal Dolan in early March 2002, with Nancy Brown in late March 2002, with the Archdiocesan Review Team in May 2011. You know, no matter how many times I come forward, my information always seems to have been scrubbed. And I think it's obvious that that was done at a minimum to protect Timothy Cardinal Dolan, if not by Timothy Cardinal Dolan, the Archbishop of New York and one of the biggest names in the Catholic Church in the United States, if not the world.